Welcome to Gippslandscapes, stories of people doing great things to help the Gippsland environment. Brought to you by the West Gippsland Catchment Management Authority. Here is your host, Jared Callanan.
G'day there and welcome to the little part of the internet where we chat about good things that happen. And today it's not just good, it's actually bloody spectacular. Come with me to Woolamai in southwest Gippsland and the 100-acre property of Carl and Rachel Russo. Now, both Carl and Rachel are in their 30s, got two young kids and running two businesses. So you'd think maybe they wouldn't have much time to do anything else. Well, you'd be wrong. This property, cleared in the early 20th century, is pretty steep and pretty intimidating in some ways and is slowly being restored with the energy of local land care groups, schools and the 100% commitment from its owners. Carl explains what attracted them to the site in the first place.
My wife, Rachel, and I, we both grew up surrounded by bush and wildlife, and we're always, you know, you always love that. But we're drawn down to the coast here. We're on the Bass Coast in Victoria, where, you know, a lot of the remnant bush was decimated for farmland. So, you know, the two didn't go hand in hand. So when we stumbled across this parcel of land, it was it was a pretty bare, open, barren parcel, but it was so beautiful and raw in its topography and the valley and the high hills and the beautiful views, and we sort of fell in love with it and fell in love with what we knew that it could become and what it once was. It had been used for cattle and sheep farming for however many years now, how many decades, obviously it was completely cleared. So we set out searching for 5 to 10 acres of bush and nice cozy spot. We ended up with a 100-acre piece of grass that was in desperate need of some work, which had, you know, significant erosion issues and topsoil was just nowhere to be seen up the top. It was windy. It was really dry in the summer, so it was pretty rugged. But there was something about it that captivated us, and yeah, it's certainly a lifetime mission and a lifetime project. And we, in purchasing the land, we kind of knew we were taking on something large like that. But you know, to our absolute amazement and delight, through the help with land care, we've been able to make such advancements in such a short amount of time. You know, so much more than we ever thought we would be able to. And I thought we'd.
When did you purchase the property?
We purchased it in 2016. It's probably late 2016, so it's pretty much exactly 4 years ago now. And we had a reasonably long settlement. It was about 6 months. And in that time, I contacted Landcare, Bass Coast Landcare Network, whose office is actually really local to our property, which is handy. They're just 5 minutes down the road. And within a week, I had Dave Bateman, who's a real mover and shaker there, out on top of the hill looking out over the property. And I was sort of taking him through the vision for the whole place and what we wanted to do to revegetate the whole valley, to give it back to wildlife, to see the whole property regenerate, basically. And his thirst for a project like that was really encouraging. It was fantastic. Like, I wasn't sure what that conversation was going to go like, whether it was going to be too big a mission to take on. But, yeah, from that point, Landcare have just been fantastic in organising volunteers, funding, everything you can imagine. We've organised a couple of cook-ups. But apart from that, it's just been really well driven by them, and we've just done three enormous winter plantings over the years. And we now have large sections of the property that are, you know, holding probably 3-4 metre sort of high trees already.
Oh, wow.
In such a short time.
And in terms of totality, you've planted how many trees and shrubs?
I should do the maths, actually.
It's tens of thousands.
Yeah, it's 60 or 70,000, I think, on the property. I should actually know that figure. You've put me on this. It's something that I should know, but it sort of all just got into a blur. But
You might lose count after 50,000, I would imagine.
Yeah, that's right. Well, we set a record in the Landcare network by doing 16,000 in a day, which was a massive effort. We had 200 school kids help out that day, and a whole bunch of volunteers, and that was one of our first big days. And then we did sort of smaller days of 5 to 10,000 after that, And smaller groups again. But yeah, look, we're somewhere in the 60,000 to 70,000 range. And there were a couple of small pockets on the property that the previous owner had planted as well. So there's probably, there was a few acres worth. So probably another, 10,000 plus plants already put in on the property.
And in terms of catchment, we're always interested in sort of where things connect to. Where does this land connect to in terms of waterways and, I guess, out to the ocean eventually?
Yeah, sure. So we're sort of on the western front of the Bass Fault. We face Western Port Bay. And so our whole property drains to the west out. We have quite a beautiful valley that it runs out. There's a valley either side of our sort of the hill we perched on, and that runs straight out through the Bass Flats and into Western Port Bay. So it's a fair catchment in that respect. We have Blue Mountain Creek on the south side of the property, and the valley within the property doesn't have a name. We might have to name it one day, but that's quite a waterway through winter, especially after rains. Like, we have a waterfall at the bottom, and there's a lot of movement, and it's always muddy, murky, silty water, which it shouldn't be, So I'm really excited to see how that transitions over the next decade, because what we're doing to the valley and the regeneration of it will clean that up. It will start to bind everything together and filter that water as it heads out. So, yeah, look, we have a huge, as I mentioned, it's a 100-acre property. There's probably about 150 acres of surface area given how steep it is. And as of now, we've probably got about 80 acres of it revegetated.
Good Lord. I mean, people listening can hear obviously the passion and the devotion in your voice to this project, and I'll pop some links to Instagram pages and that sort of thing, which, and videos that have been done by various landcare groups in the show notes, so people can click on there and get a visual sense of what's been going on there. In looking at some of those images, I'm not sure I saw anything like livestock or farming. So is there a view that once those trees get to a certain height, you might do some small farming on there, or is it really just a question of using it as almost a carbon sink in some ways?
Yeah, it's look, we didn't, although it is a zoned in farming zone and it was a farm for the last century or so, we never bought it for the purpose of farming livestock. So we do have a small paddock on the only real productive part of the property, which we're keeping there just because we're not 100% sure what to do with it yet. It's very steep. It's very rugged. It's not great farmland in terms of, fattening up animals. It just begs the question as why it was ever cleared, especially to the extent it was right down into the valley. So, yeah, look, the intention for us is 100% to just give it back and let it regenerate. It's something that we're passionate about. As I mentioned earlier, we both grew up in the bush. I'm a landscape architect.
Where did you grow up, Carl?
I grew up sort of up in the hills, sort of from Pakenham up that way.
Okay.
And my wife is a little bit further out, sort of halfway to Warrigal, in a little town called Maryknoll. We both grew up surrounded by bush and wildlife, and we've got two young girls, and we're keen to set up a property where they can have a similar upbringing to us, running through the bush, seeing the wildlife, also just doing something positive. It's, especially at the moment, we're surrounded by so much negative news and negative everything. There's destruction.
You've noticed that.
Yeah, just a little eye. Rach and I, we refuse now. We shut it off. We don't watch it anymore. We just, enough's enough kind of thing. So I listen to very little or to none of the mainstream media at the moment, because it's nothing good that you get from it. So it's nice to, in the face of all that, it's just nice to do something positive for us, for the wildlife, for the environment and the climate. It's really rewarding to see, and it's like the hills, they grew amazing, huge forests back, back before we ruined it all. So it's not a surprise to see the trees literally jumping out of the ground. As I mentioned before, like, we're only 3 to 4 years into the growing of this, of the first plantation, and there are already trees that are well in excess of 4 metres tall. Wow. And we already have, the
and
girls
is
are already
wildlife returning?
It's quite amazing, actually. We have so much. We have resident kangaroos, about a mob of about 40 kangaroos that love hanging around. We've left a couple of little grassy patches for them to lounge in the sun, and they're always around. Wallabies, echidnas, wombats. The birds of prey are actually quite amazing. We've got a whole range of birds of prey, so that's pretty cool to watch. Certainly on different wind days where they hang around on different sides of the hill for the updraft and hunt. We've had some sightings of owls on some of the wildlife monitoring cameras that Landcare have put in. The wildlife is definitely increased in the last 4 years, 100%. And I think because we're surrounded by farmland, we are 100% surrounded by paddocks. So it's like a little sanctuary for them. And I think they're getting to know that and they're spending more time there. So, yeah, it's great to see. We've also pulled out a lot of the old fences and everything that were through the property so that, you know, they can move between all the different areas without having to negotiate all this old barbed wire and rubbish that's tangled up in the grass.
You mentioned just in passing, and I'll paraphrase, you know, that's what the country was like before we cleared it and sort of ruined it or changed it dramatically. And, of course, when I do interviews like this with landholders, we often refer to the previous landholder. But I'm just curious, do you know even the prehistory of that back to, I don't know, it would be last century, wouldn't it? So, you know, the early part of the 20th century, even the later part of the 19th century. Have you been able to research that to see when it was cleared, for instance, what drove people, whether it was, I don't know, it sounds like goat country, so maybe there was a nascent goat farm in the early days of Gippsland.
Yeah, look, we do have a book that we've been reading at the moment, so I'm still learning, and I don't have all the history and all the answers yet. I do know that a lot of the farms or a lot of land down this way were kind of given on the proviso that they were cleared, and if they weren't cleared, they were taken back by the government, or they were given cheaply, something along those lines. So there was a fair incentive to clear the land to keep it and to farm it. That was probably around 100 years ago, and I need to do more research into that. I don't know enough. I've been talking to a lot of we've started to get to know a lot of the local people and some of the older people that know a lot more about that, and started to get some stories around the history, which has been really good. But we've been so flat out with our heads down and our bum up planting trees and just getting the place underway that we haven't taken the time to really sit down and go through that, which we should and we will. We do know that it was a sort of a cool temperate rainforest down in the valleys, with more, I guess, just a more bushland forest up higher on the hills, with some pretty enormous trees. Tree ferns, lyrebirds, they're the stories that we hear. And when we did the first inspection, there was a couple of sheep skeletons in the valley, grass, more grass, and flies. So, you can understand the motivation just in that.
Yeah. What do those older neighbours think of the project you and Rachel are embarked on?
It's an interesting question. I think there's probably some divided opinion. our neighbour immediately to our north, he's pretty like-minded, which is great. He's done a fair bit of planting on his property. And I actually think that he did a lot of the planting that was already pre-existing on our property before we bought it, because it was a friend of his that owned it. So on the other sides, I'm not too sure. I don't think it's... I guess we're probably bringing the average age down, definitely in the street. And I think there's probably a lot of older farmers that just don't. I guess they don't see the positives or the needs. They sort of see it more as a farm and a business and an economic piece of dirt.
But without wishing to pry, obviously you're not seeing it as an income stream, because you mentioned, I think, you're in landscape gardening, and Rachel's probably home with the children at the moment. But
we never saw it as a income stream at all. It was a lifestyle property for us, somewhere we want to set up and be forever. I'm a landscape architect, and so that's, you know, I don't intend to become a farmer, although I do intend to spend a lot more time out there. And Rachel has a produce store that's was one of the reasons we moved down this way, which was it's called Udder and Ho, and she focuses on celebrating a lot of the Gippsland produce that often gets shipped into Melbourne, and a lot of locals don't get to enjoy it. So she's got a couple of little stores around that. So, you know, we're both very busy in our own little professions as well, because we both have our own businesses. But yeah, that's our income stream. We don't intend to farm it. That's for sure.
What does the future hold for you? It sounds like you've done a power of work over the last 4 years or so. And with Landcare, you've been very generous in acknowledging their input and local community members, schools, and so on.
Yeah.
What are your plans for the next 3 or 4 years?
Well,
apart from not watching the news.
Sounded like a real hermit now. well, we've got two girls. We've got 5.5 and 3, and we've been renovating a house up at the property. So our intention is to get up there very soon, probably in the next couple of months. We've been on that project for 2.5 years as well. So in the spirit of regenerating and recycling and all of that, we actually moved an old house out of Melbourne and have been fixing that up. So it's a nice old house, but it needed a lot of love. So I guess we'll be working on finishing that and setting up there, because we're not living there as yet. We've been living about 15 minutes away and travelling to and from there to do everything that we're doing. And basically continue to work locally as much as we can and spend time on the property and keep going, really, in terms of what we've started. Like, there's still a lot of jobs to do. There's going to be areas of planting that probably aren't as successful that need top-ups. There's a lot of erosion areas that need a little bit more attention. So in terms of the property, we'll just be still chipping away at the same dream there, I guess. But our goal over the next few years is to be well settled up there and enjoying what we're seeing change before our eyes, which will be the vegetation coming back and all the wildlife around that, and how it's going to change the environment that it is to live in, which will be really interesting.
You've sort of alluded to a partial response to this question, but I haven't actually asked you this question specifically. Why do it?
It's when you're surrounded by so much negative stuff in the world, and particularly around destruction of environment, loss of habitat, etc. It's so nice to do something like this. And you can see, like, Rachel and I, we've always, as I said, we've been interested in the environment. We've grown up in it, and it's really a rewarding thing to see and do. And it never occurred to us to do anything else. It's what it was crying out for, and we get a lot out of it. So it's really rewarding to see it happen, and it's a beautiful property. It's going to be an even more beautiful property once it's back to forest. So, I don't know. I guess it was never really a question of whether to do it or not to do it. I guess the only thing was that we never anticipated taking on such a large project in terms of just the scale of it. So we definitely made a lifelong mission out of it, getting something like this. But yeah, in answer of to why I do it, it's just because we want to do something positive, and we really enjoy it. We enjoy what it's doing, because we can see the benefit on so many levels, environmentally, even just mentally going there and being rewarded by seeing things move and change and grow, and wildlife coming in and our girls running around and climbing the trees. And I guess it's not much else to it, I don't think.
No, that's it, yeah.
And we're just fortunate, that we've been able to make such a advancement on it so quickly in a few years with the help of Landcare, as I mentioned before.
Mm. Yeah, well, power to them. And Intrepid Landcare too have been involved. And
yeah, they have.
A bunch of other different groups
too. And they've been great in spreading the message. And I guess that's the other thing to touch on, is that, you know, it's nice to have a positive story to tell, and for people to, you know, our project's getting used a little bit as an example, because I think a lot of farmers and landowners are happy to hand over small portions of their land to Landcare to regenerate. But not many people are willing to hand over such a huge area to make a large impact. And so it's nice to actually have that as well as an example and a bit of a flagship project for them, to say this is what we can do on a mass scale, and this is the difference that we can make. So, you know, once this all grows and links into the planting that I mentioned earlier that our neighbour had done, which is probably already about 10 years old, so it's quite established, you know, it's pushing a really positive message. And the more young people that are coming down to this area, which we are, you know, we've been here for 5 years or so now, so we're seeing it firsthand, and a lot more people are doing this sort of thing. And so we just love pushing that message. And we understand that, you know, obviously farming is still a very important part of our existence and everything, but there's a lot of land down here that doesn't lend itself to productive farming, and there needs to be a greater balance achieved in that, we think. So, yeah, it's great to push that message with a really strong example.
It's interesting. I was watching, there's a Netflix documentary about regenerative agriculture doing the rounds at the moment, which is it's pretty interesting show. We've done a lot of stories about Regen Ag on this podcast series, but it's a pretty wide-ranging doco. But it did say, look, if you're losing hope around things like climate change, just get off the couch and plant a tree. You know, that's the least you can do.
Yeah, it's easy too. Plant one anyway.
Yeah, 60,000 might take at least a couple of days. But it is that thing about providing hope for other people, providing an alternate narrative, I suppose, would be the 2020 version of saying it. We all use the word narrative far too much, but it is that alternative pathway, isn't it, that you can actually push back.
Yeah, you can do something, absolutely. And it doesn't take much to start. You know, you don't have to go and get a whopping tree. You can get a tiny one. It's a little seedling. It's an easy thing to do, and it doesn't take long for the natural world to recover and heal itself. That's the thing, if we just give it the chance. So, and that's one thing that's been really glaring in what we've done. You know, how quickly it's bouncing back is amazing. And there's certainly setbacks too, like because of the imbalances present. You know, when you've just got 100 acres of grassland and you've got a lot of insects, a lot of I guess there's an imbalance in the ecosystems there. And so, you know, some trees get heavily attacked by certain insects because we don't have the birds and everything else yet to balance things out. So it's interesting to watch that little battle unfold, but it is, you know, it is progressing, and it is getting there. But it's all interesting, I guess.
Indeed it is. Carl, we'll wrap it there, but look, a delight to chat to you, and thank you very much. And as I said, I'll share some online content around video and still photos and Instagram pages on the show notes so people can have a click on there. But for now, thank you very much for having a chat to us.
No worries, Jared. Thanks for having me on. It's been great.
Carl Russo there, talking about the commitment he and partner Rachel have made to restoring 100 acres of steep, eroded, and you'd probably say unloved country to something like its former glory. It's a hell of a story, and if you want to know and see more, check out the show notes where you'll find some videos as well as links to Carl's Instagram page. And as we're talking about getting all enthused and up and about, I'll pop some links to Landcare in West Gippsland as well as the Intrepid Landcare Facebook page for listeners in their 20s and 30s for you to check out. Now, you may not be able to get involved in plantings at the moment, but once COVID restrictions ease, there may well be opportunities for you to get involved. And as we mentioned in the podcast, a small action can have a big impact. So get out there, assist your community, and assist landholders who want to try and do the right thing as well. Until next time, stay safe, stay healthy, and look forward to your company then. Cheers.